All right, you are watching and listening to the Electronic Intifada. I am John Elmer. This is the Resistance Report for day 622 of Israel's genocidal war in Gaza and day 7 of the Israel-Iran war. This is going to be a special report on the first week of the Iran-Israel war. The live show, as a note, will be back on July 3rd, and I'll cover everything from the resistance in Gaza that has been published between now and when we're back on air, so you won't be missing anything. You can also follow daily reports at my X account, as you have been doing throughout the war. There have been, again, a significant tempo of operations in Gaza, more than 40 this week alone, centered on particularly Khan Yunis, where there's been a pitched battle, and more than 25 qualitative operations in Khan Yunis, including 4 deadly operations in the past few days that include a guerrilla action device that was affixed to an Israeli Namur troop carrier that penetrated the cabin and killed and wounded the entire infantry squad that was in that Namur troop carrier. The Qassam field report the next day said that it was a Shawad EFP. The Israelis said that it was a guerrilla action device. It'll be interesting to see the video in the future on that, to see that operation. In order to handle the war in Iran, the Israeli military has pulled the 98th Division, their commando division, the division that ran amok throughout Gaza, sacking Shifa Hospital, carried out the Jabalia camp massacres. Their primary commando and paratrooper force, they have been pulled out of Gaza, along with the Nahal Brigade was pulled out, and most of the 7th Armored Brigade has been pulled from Gaza to handle the borders and the West Bank during this war with Iran. And of course, significant, if not the vast majority, the overwhelming majority of their fighter aircraft are tied up in the Iran war as well. And their helicopter gunships are patrolling for drones. So significant drawdown in Gaza that has matched a significant uptick in resistance operations following Sun Tzu. They withdraw, we advance. Israeli military has been quoted multiple times through Army radio saying that the tempo of operations has dramatically increased since the war in Iran began. So we will take a look at all of that when we come back with the resistance report in the near future. But today, let's take a look at the first week of the war with Iran and Israel. The war began this past Friday, June 13th, with a perfidious act of aggression, 48 hours before the United States and Iran were to meet in nuclear talks. Israel carried out 5 waves over an hour and a bit, beginning at 3:30 a.m. local time, assassinating senior Iranian generals and nuclear scientists, some of them in the general staff building where military figures would be, but many of them in their homes, killed with their families. Their neighbors were killed in that operation as well. The Iranians clearly were not expecting that, anticipating the negotiations that were upcoming. The Iranians say, for their part, that they believed a strike was possible, but didn't believe that the nuclear talks in Oman failed, but they didn't expect the nuclear talks to be preempted by this massive decapitation. It's a devastating decapitation operation of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC. They lost in the assassination their overall commander, the aerospace chief, and 7 of his senior commanders, military intelligence chief, and his deputies were killed. The military chief of staff was assassinated. The Quds Force commander was assassinated. The air defense and drone force commanders were assassinated. And like I said, the general staff building was targeted, along with more than at least 10 nuclear scientists, including the head of the program, top advisors, and the top negotiator in the Oman nuclear talks. And the president of the United States bragged about that, that they assassinated the people that he was negotiating with, which is something we've also seen, of course, in Gaza, where the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh, who was the top negotiator in Doha, was assassinated in Tehran during the inauguration of the new Iranian government. This operation was apparently, according to Netanyahu, was born out of the successes that Israel saw in the assassination of Hassan Nasrallah and the decapitation in Hezbollah. He said that he immediately began this plan, but of course the plan all roots back to the failure of the war in Gaza. Israel's intention for the war in Gaza was that it would last a couple of months and that they would roll over the resistance and take control in Gaza. Of course, as followers of this program know, that has not happened in any way. And the what has happened is that Israel has been allowed a genocide. The international rules-based order, such as it was, has been dismantled, and Netanyahu is currently running amok through the Middle East looking to redraw the borders. If we take a look at the next map, we can see the targets within Israel. Abu Ubaidah, the spokesperson for the Qassam Brigades and the Palestinian Resistance, responded to the assassinations of the top IRGC leadership who had been supportive of the Palestinians. And Abu Ubaidah said this week in a text message that we declare our solidarity with the Islamic Republic of Iran in the face of the brutal Zionist aggression, which is primarily due to its unwavering support for the Palestinian people and its significant backing of our honorable resistance fighters. We also mourn its senior leaders and martyrs who ascended as a result of this cowardly aggression. The Zionist enemy is utterly deluded if it thinks that these treacherous strikes can undermine the resistance fronts or solidify the foundations of his fragile entity in the region. On the absolute contrary, it brings to commit the successive strategic mistakes that will bring closer to its, it will bring it closer to its inevitable demise. God willing, Abu Ubaidah said. You can see the number of targets throughout Israel. The air bases were targeted, but particularly the strikes focused on central Israel, Tel Aviv, and north in Haifa. I'm going to show a clip now of some of those missile launches that Iran executed over the first number of days. There's been more than 400 ballistic missile strikes that you can see in this next video, number three. So these are the launches from Iran. The Iranian military got its footing quite impressively quickly after a devastating hit on Friday morning, and were able to strike back within hours against Tel Aviv and Haifa, as well as military bases. Of course, they're covered by Israel's military sensors, so we don't know a lot about the base hits, but we definitely know a lot about the strikes on Tel Aviv. In Iran, what we're watching here is the launch of Iranian missiles. Iran has a significant indigenous missile program that has been built over decades of sanctions. They produce variants on their base missiles. They upgrade old stocks and generally produce missiles at a rate that will outpace the U.S. and Israeli interceptor manufacturing. So it would suggest that a war of attrition could favor Iran in this battle. We'll have to see how that plays out. Iran's response has been through missile attacks and drone attacks that, according to the Iranian Aerospace Force and the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, have launched 13 waves in the first 7 days. I am reporting this on June 19th, 7 days since the operation began. The Iranians have launched at least 400 ballistic missiles and some 1,000 drones at Israel since the start of the conflict on Friday. That is according to IDF data. According to the Israeli Air Force, they have hit hundreds of targets across Iran focused on above-ground nuclear sites as well as ballistic missile installations. And Israel was able to pre-position inside Israel through collaborators and agents anti-tank weapons that were used in the assassinations, as well as drones that were pre-positioned in country in Iran similar to the Ukrainian attack against Russian air bases in the past few weeks. So we have seen a precedent for that. Iran is a massive country and has borders that are porous with non-allied states that Israel has taken advantage of to get positioning inside Iran. If we take a look at the next video, number four, is remarkable video from the cockpit of an Emirati airliner, where we could see the launch of Iranian missiles from various sites in Iran. You can see these missiles are multi-stage. There's a booster stage, mid-flight stage, and then there's a re-entry vehicle that carries the warhead, and the missiles that Iran uses have maneuverable re-entry vehicles, which can vex Israeli and American aerial defense systems. Of course, the U.S. and Israel's air defense is not Israeli alone. They are both incorporated in fundamental ways, including the THAAD terminal high altitude interceptors, which are literally run by those batteries are literally run by American soldiers. So there's lots of American role in each stage of this process, although the United States has not formally joined the war as of recording this again on June 19th. Things can change very fast in this war and have, but so far no official is U.S. response to this war. And we can see in the next video some of the strikes on Tel Aviv. I'll let you just listen to those strikes because there's audio in those. But what we're looking at is missile strikes, ballistic missile strikes, hitting Tel Aviv in key locations throughout the city, as well as Haifa. Israel has admitted to significant and extensive damage from these missile strikes, but they claim the impossibly low number of only 20 impacts in urban areas. That number is almost defied by what you are seeing here on your screen, where I've pulled together a set of videos that pretty much show a comparable number to what Israel said has happened over 7 days. Just to underscore that point, the mayor of a Tel Aviv suburb of Bat Yam said that 60 buildings were dropped in a single night in the single suburb. So clearly the 20 that Israel is clearly underselling the number that have struck and have cracked down on media and local publishing through their military censor of strikes in Iran. They're now illegal to broadcast. They have shut down media broadcasting, as well as civilians. More than 24 people have been killed in Israel and 500 wounded. More than 250 in Iran have been killed, mostly civilians. If we look at this next video, you can see how Israel has positioned its air defenses inside the city. We're watching Israeli air defenses being launched here. Those launches right from in the core of the city, defending and then being hit by a counterstrike by the Iranians. Israel is using its aerial defense array, which is, of course, the Iron Dome is the famous one, but Iron Dome is for rockets, and they're not used in these attacks. You're going to see another missile strike come in on the same air defense battery once it launches its missile, something we saw Hezbollah do as well.
Okay.
And that puts those air defense systems right in civilian areas. And again, so the main systems that are being used are David Sling, that's for short-range ballistic missiles and ballistic missiles that weren't intercepted in the outer atmosphere or high altitude. The high altitude system is the Arrow 2 and the Arrow 3. And of course, they also have the THAAD system, which is the U.S. high altitude air defense batteries that I said were run by American troops. These are multi-million dollar per missile interceptor. And we've seen throughout this battle of the past 7 days, many interceptors for a single missile. This is something we saw with Yemen as well, where they fire multiple interceptors worth $2 million apiece at a single ballistic missile being fired from Yemen. That is also something that we are seeing here. And the limits of these interceptors are real. The THAAD system itself, that's run by the American soldiers, they have only produced 600 total interceptors in the entire history of that project. So a war of attrition does not seem to favor the ability to have these interceptors. The United States Navy is also involved in intercepting. SM-3 missiles were found, and that's an interceptor that costs upward of $30 million for a single weapon that was used and that was found in Iraq. So it had been used against these Iranian missiles. The Wall Street Journal published a report citing U.S. intelligence officials yesterday that said, for certain, Israel does not have more interceptors than Iran has missiles. The U.S. is also helping with refueling, as they always do, and the question of whether they join the war is still an open question. The U.S. president, of course, says one thing one day and another the next. And so a very dangerous escalation is possible in this war. But for now, it has been limited to strikes in Iran and strikes on Israel. We can take a look at this next slide to show some of this damage, the damage inside Israel. And interestingly, for people that have been following the resistance report and my reporting on Israeli special forces units, the Israeli military came out this week and showed video of their special forces units that we've seen operating in Gaza, like the OCATS unit, and that is a canine unit that the dogs are integrated in their unit. They talked in a promotional release this week about how the canine OCATS unit can be used to help find people buried in the rubble from these missile attacks. On screen, you're seeing collapsed buildings, multiple collapsed high-rise towers in Tel Aviv for those who are listening and not watching. And so they've talked about how, for example, their Lotar commandos can be used to dig people out by rappelling down from the building. So we see a real switch from these units being used to carry out the battle in Gaza to how they can be used to save Israeli civilians that are underneath these Iranian missile attacks. The Israeli military has claimed, again, they do this at the beginning of every war, but I'll report on it just so we can track it as we go through, that Israel says that they've knocked out almost half of Iran's ballistic missile launchers, some 200, but of course that presumes Israel knows the totality of ballistic missile launchers, which is almost certainly untrue. And we will track that in the coming days. But we can remember claims like this at the beginning of the 2006 war with Hezbollah in July 2006, when Dan Halutz, the Air Force chief, said that they had knocked out all of Hezbollah's long-range missiles capacity, and then Hezbollah carried out 34 straight days of uninterrupted missile strikes. And of course, we know from the Gaza example that turns like operational control and dismantling of Qassam battalions has never been true. But you can see the significant damage here to Israel. A number of mayors in Israel said they'd never seen anything like it. It's an unprecedented attack on Israel's heartland. Israel's been carrying out wars of destruction and terror all around the region. And this is the first time that we're seeing really Israelis on that side of it. We're looking at a destroyed building here that could look like any city that the Israelis destroy civilian towers in. Going forward, I just want to show you some of the missiles that are being used just to get some grounding on that. We can skip forward to number 8 on this. These are just these simple way of looking at what has been used. The principal missiles that are being used are the Ghadr, the Imad. Those are both liquid fuel, and the Kaibar Shaikan, which is a solid fuel. There's variants on these principal missiles, and I think that's the significance. We don't know a lot about these missiles because the project is classified, and this is the first time, other than the True Promise operations that we saw last year in limited effect, this is really the first test for Iran's missile capabilities in battle. But there's variants. They use a core set of missiles, and then there's variants on each that can change, like changing the weight, changing the warhead size, weight, the stabilizers, the materials that are used, the airframes, the navigation systems. So they're interchangeable and upgradable, and that's one of the things that the Indigenous Weapons Program has done, is upgrade old stocks. If we take a look at the next slide, you can see the ones that are principally being used in this battle. They've introduced the Haj Qasem, which is named after Qasem Soleimani. He was assassinated by Trump in 2020. Qasem Soleimani was a key architect of he was the commander of the Quds force and a key architect of the regional plan that the Iranians used with their allies throughout the region, Hezbollah and in Iraq in particular. So these were the weapons that have been used so far. The benefit of a solid fuel missile is that it's a quicker launch. So the Kaibar Shaikan, which is also similar to the Palestine 2 ballistic missile that we've seen the Yemenis fire, you can launch them faster if they're solid fuel. They don't require as many personnel. They can be refueled quicker. They don't need refueling. Whereas the liquid fuel ones require personnel to fill the liquid before launch, which leaves them susceptible. So these solid fuel missiles are going to be, I think, a very significant in play significantly in the coming days. We take a look at the next slide. You can see that there is a wide variety of Iranian ballistic and cruise missiles that are capable of reaching all over the region. We were looking in that previous slide at the ballistic missiles that can hit Israel that are more than 1,500 kilometers away. But if you have the Americans joining the war and American bases become targeted, you look at a graph like this and you can see that they have more than a dozen missiles that can hit short range and touch American bases all throughout the region. If we look at the next one, you can see the size of this is the Haj Qasem. You can see just in human terms the size of that missile on the back of the truck. It is also a solid fuel, and it's hypersonic, and it can be maneuvered in its re-entry vehicle, which will certainly give Israeli aerial defense a lot of problems. But on top of the missiles, if we look at the next slide, you can see the drones that are being used. And of course, this Shahed 136 drone, these are were used during the True Promise operations last year. And these are small drones, about the size of a car, about the speed of a car, small car, about the cost of a small car, that are launched, their truck launched. They can be launched in swarms. And according to the Israelis, more than 1,000 of these have been launched just in the first 7 days. And they fly low, they fly slow, they're fiberglass, they have a low radar signature. And so these need to be, these are part of a strategy to flood missile defenses and also require fighter jets and attack helicopters to down them. You can see in these next couple of slides a good view of the underground storage. This is the original Shahed view from the Iranians of the drone itself that was in development phase. This was its release. If you could look at the next one, shows the underground storage of these. And this is why when Israel claims they've knocked out missile defense, ballistic missile batteries, they're not including these underground positions. And you can see what we're looking at on the screen here is a bunch of Shahed 136 drones lined up as far as you can see in an underground base. You could see that on the next slide as well. There's three variations of the 136, and they carry a warhead that's between 20 and 50 kilos, so you know, up to 100 pounds, and they could be fragmentation warheads. They also send decoys, which is part of flooding the zone that the Iranians do. The next one is haven't been used. This is the Pava cruise missile. We saw these be used in Operation True Promise. They go faster than the drones, slower than the ballistic missiles. They have jet-powered engine and a heavier warhead, and I think we will be seeing those coming. We have not seen them yet in the first week, but they are a primary tool of the IRGC's aerospace force. If we look at the next slide, you can see that the IRGC has downed an Israeli military Hermes 900 drone. This is the Elbit drone that we saw Hezbollah down several of during the war. And if we watch this video that we're watching on screen, you can see the Hellfire missile that was attached to it. And this is in Esfahan in central Iran that this drone was downed yesterday. And we can see that footage of this next to see the indications that they are using the 358 missile that was used by Hezbollah and was used so successfully by the Yemeni armed forces in downing the $30 million Reaper drones. These Hermes 900 Elbit drones are $10 million a pop for their part. And these missile operations have also targeted key infrastructure. If we look at this next slide here, we're going to see a strike on the Haifa oil refinery, the main oil refinery. It was a direct hit on the second day. It was hit on the second day of attacks. This was on the fourth day of attacks on Monday that it was hit and taken offline. The Bezan Oil Refinery and Petrochemicals Company announced that it had suspended all of its facilities in the Haifa Bay area after the attack on the power plant. And this is what really got police in Israel set about to clear international media journalists who have been broadcasting live missile impacts on the Haifa area. The coastal district police vehicles set out to conduct a search and handle of the incident after this video was shown. So this is a major hit to Israel's primary oil refinery. The company itself reported to the stock to the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange that they were shut down. Also, two of Israel's three Mediterranean gas platforms have been shut down and ceased operating. So together, these platforms produce 70% of Israel's electricity. Again, pointing to the inability of Israel to carry out this a war of attrition in this case. Last year, Bezan supplied 65% of the diesel fuel for transportation, 59% of the gasoline, and 52% of the kerosene used for jet fuel and cooking gas. So this is a significant high-value target that has been taken offline with no signs of it returning. And that is a significant hit. On this next slide, we can see the real future of this conflict if the Americans were to join. There is more than 63 American bases and installations in the region. And the bases are all within range of all of Iran's weapons. So the United States plans to expand this war, the target bank for the Iranians dramatically increases and the threat to the world economy becomes significant. We can see that in this next slide where you see the Strait of Hormuz, which is a key choke point off the coast of Iran between Oman and Iran, that through which 20% of the world's energy supplies. An economist was on Al Jazeera yesterday saying that the oil price at the gas tank for people around the world would basically double overnight if the Iranians were to close the Strait of Hormuz. So that is the overview. If we look at this last slide, after carrying out a genocide, bombing all of its neighboring countries, killing thousands of civilians, tens of thousands of civilians, potentially hundreds of thousands of civilians. This Washington Post headline was a bit rich. It says, Israelis reeling after Iranian barrages and they brace for a new kind of war. The new kind of war is the war where Israelis get hit. So that is the resistance report for this week. I just wanted to get a first week overview of the war in Iran. I will remind you that the live show returns July 3rd. All of the resistance operations from Gaza will all be covered when we come back, so you won't be missing anything. And you can also check out my X or Twitter account or the other social media platforms where I post the videos in between and break most of those down for you. So that is the resistance report for day 622 and Iran war day 7.